You are an energetic being first and foremost, so the quality of your energy field is really important. It works like a filter, each part of the field enabling or preventing whatever is turning up in your life. This is the Future Self Energetics Show. I'm your host, Amanda Nelson, and I work in the body, mind, and spirits community. I'm an award-winning master energist. That's a therapist that specializes in improving the quality of the energy fields that move in, through, and around your body. If you want anything in your life to change, you have to begin with changing your energy field first. So my shows are a mixture of talk and therapy ideas, interviews, and thought-provoking inspiration. They're all about energy, energy fields, protection, and connection. If there's a topic you'd love me to cover in my show, please email me, amanda@futureselfenergetics.com. And if you love the show here on UK Health Radio, please spread the word about it in your networks. This summer, well, every summer, I'm fascinated by the bees that come to visit the garden. And this year, I was able to not only see them in amongst the flowers and vegetables as an active presence, but I began to tap into their process. Watching them work day after day amongst my English lavender and Agastache cinnamon and the oregano and lemon basil flowers, the Thai basil, I began to observe something quite profound. These little buzzing creatures that I love so much, they were showing me an entire alchemical process from selection to transformation to preservation. And if I cared to look, if I was prepared to watch, observe, learn, I would see it unfolding, the entire process right in front of my eyes. So a bit of backstory then. I'd planted various flowers and herbs in my back garden plot this season because I wanted to deliberately see which ones attracted the most bees into the garden. Now, I did have by various flowers. What I mean is I packed in so many different varieties, really, because what I wanted to see was, did the bees really mind? Were they able to forage a great deal? Could they have favourites? I know that bees are in decline. I know the flowers need bees to pollinate them. And I wanted the joy of seeing the bees enjoying a really plentiful supply of forage really easily. I didn't want them to have to work for it particularly hard. I didn't want them to have to work so hard all the time to find what they needed. I think it must be exhausting for them to have to fly, to travel great distances, especially when the pickings could be sparse. So I thought I would plan something with them in mind, a surprise of sorts for them. Yes, that's the way my mind works. And then see what transformation might happen for those little bees. I planted a vast selection of different plants. I'd done my research. I wanted the ones that had the reputation of being bee and butterfly friendly. They often put that on the seed packets, or sometimes they have a little bee symbol on the label that sticks into the plant's pot at the garden centre. And I gave myself a budget. And I have to say, the bees do have very, very clear preferences. And the extent of those clear preferences really surprised me. I'd watch the bees coming and going day after day through the late spring and summer. And as I observed much more closely, I realised that their selectivity wasn't in any way random. I'd given them a plentiful buffet of choice, and yet they were incredibly selective about the flowers they preferred to visit. And I came to realise that this selectivity was the first of many steps in a very sophisticated transformation process. And I'd never really understood that the bees were using this sophisticated transformation process before. The bees, therefore, became my teachers this summer. They taught me about alchemy, and I'm using what I've learned to think about transformation in lots of areas of my life. I thought it would be interesting then to explore this together with you on my show. I'm Amanda Nelson. This is the Future Self Energetic Show on UK Health Radio. And if you're interested in alchemy and a process that seems to have been perfected by the bees, then I hope you'll listen to my show this week.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
I feel that the first lesson was how selective the bees are, all about how they start to commence the alchemical process, where that alchemical process should begin. The bees are at the beginning of a magical process, and selection of the first right step seemed to them to be really important. The bees weren't interested in every plant I'd offered. Even those that were supposed to be really, really bee and butterfly friendly ended up being ignored. And there was quite a selection there. I wanted to try snapdragons, they're supposed to be favourites, roses, calendulas, daisies, echinaceas, strawberries, thistles, tomatoes, berry blooms, zinnias. I tried them all, and I deliberately provided that huge amount of choice, many more than I have time really to list here, because I wanted to find out which of the plants attracted the most pollinators. And I wasn't actually setting out to receive a lesson in alchemy. I just planted all these different flowers and then waited to see what the bees did. The bees were surprisingly selective, though. They were very, very discerning, and they seemed to have very specific criteria that they were using, and they absolutely stuck to that criteria consistently. They wouldn't settle for less if best or better was available. It wasn't as if there was only one type of bee either that was behaving this way. There were many different types of bee that I was seeing. They couldn't have shared notes back at their hives then. So lots of independent types of bees, lots of different varieties of bees, and they were all making identical choices in the garden. And they were all working those choices side by side, cooperating with one another, keeping out of each other's way and flight paths. And even though there was plenty more choice in the garden, where there was no competition, that there would be all the nectar in those blooms, nothing had got to it first. Nope, all the bees cooperated and they simply worked the same choices side by side. And they did it from dawn till dusk. The plants that they preferred, I gave up to them completely. I let them completely claim it for themselves. So I became then an interested bystander, and I was in awe of what the experiment was beginning to show me. It wasn't what I thought I was going to learn at all. And it wasn't least because it means that I know what plants to fill the garden with next year. And as far as that goes, there's absolutely no contest. I've already spoken to my husband and said, expect the garden to look different next year. It's probably only going to be wall to wall with about five or six different varieties of plants for the pollinators. If I want to bring in the bees, I need to provide the irresistible A-star choices and provide it plentifully. Yep, I've learned that. Observing them and their selectivity, though, taught me so much more. I began to understand that true alchemy starts with discernment about what we're prepared to work with first. The bees certainly weren't gathering randomly. They were choosing based on what would create the finest end result, and they were not accepting anything but. There were no second measures, no, that would be nice and I've chosen this instead. Even though they were far away from the end result, they knew categorically that if they were really discerning about every step of the process, that the end result would be something worthy of all their effort. Even though there were easier choices available, even though they could have cut corners, they were more easy to reach, plentiful supplies, less competition, they would still not give in to any temptation, if they had it, of making their lives simpler. They would not cut those corners. And I imagine that the plants they preferred, yes, they must have adapted to provide a better quality of nectar, a greater yield of that nectar, maybe easier accessibility, more abundance of blooms all at once together in an area where the bees could reach very quickly. But do you know what? I actually found myself feeling almost sad for the other plants I'd planted, as they didn't seem to be getting much of a look in at all. Plants that looked beautiful and bloomful to me clearly offered very poor picking harvests for the bees, and they ended up largely ignored. And this taught me something about transformation work in general. Whether we're talking about healing old patterns, developing new skills, or creating something meaningful or brand new, the first selection phase is critical to the success. What we choose to work on first, right at the beginning, and how we approach that first step with determination will ultimately lead to the quality of the outcome that we create for ourselves. The bees were showing me again and again that discernment isn't about being picky. It's actually about recognizing what has the greatest potential for the highest transformation. It was so cool. So what if I applied the bees' discernment in my own personal healing journey? What experiences, what patterns or opportunities in my life had the richest potential for transformation? Which choices yielded very little for the effort that I put in? Which ones would create the most nourishing outcomes? How could I apply the wisdom of the bees to my own life transformation and the alchemy that I was setting out to achieve?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Once the bees had selected their flowers, I then watched how they gathered and harvested. This wasn't hurried. It wasn't chaotic at all. Each bee would land on a flower and work it thoroughly before moving on to the next flower. There was a rhythm to it, a completeness in the cycle of it. It was funny at times. They'd land, they'd look around, and they'd stick their heads right down into the smallest of blooms. And the bees were so large, it looked like they would almost certainly get their head stuck. But no, their head would emerge, and then seconds later, they'd be deep diving into the next bloom nearby. They weren't just grazing, they were fully engaged with each and every flower that they visited. They gave it the attention it deserved before moving on to the next one. They didn't skip, they didn't rush. They were pragmatic and systematic and rhythmic and unhurried and efficient. And this showed me that gathering for transformation requires presence, intentionality, and thoroughness. The bees didn't skimp over the surface or cut corners, and neither should I. They went for a deep dive into each and every flower that they visited, and they extracted the full essence available before they moved on to the very next bloom. I also recognise that not only the bee benefited from this, as they did their respectful deep dive into the bloom, the bees would pollinate the flowers, serving the flowers that were in turn serving them. There was a reciprocal aspect of the gathering process. True alchemical work doesn't deplete the source. After all, it intentionally enhances it. So as you gather experiences and knowledge and resources for your own transformation, how can you do it in a way that enriches all parties rather than diminishes what we're drawing from? Interesting. I began to see this alchemical principle everywhere. When I'm learning from a teacher, when I'm reading a book or processing an experience or tending to the garden, the gathering becomes alchemical when I'm fully present and intentional, and when I'm also contributing something back to the exercise. Attention, appreciation, integration, beneficial exchanges, sharing with others. The real magic happened to the bees and the nectar when I wasn't around, though. The bees returned victorious to their hives, and what I couldn't see directly, but have since learnt about, is the internal transformation process that comes next. You see, to create honey, the bees have to convert the nectar they've collected. It goes through a series of quite remarkable processes. The first is actually inside the bee itself. It takes in the nectar, it adds enzymes to it, the chemical composition of the nectar transforms and the changes. And by the time the bee regurgitates this into the honeycomb, it's become something entirely different, vastly more precious. The raw material, the nectar, has to be taken inside and broken down naturally, combined with the transformer's own essence, and then reformed into something entirely new. The bee doesn't just transport nectar to a hive. The bee becomes an integral part of the transformation and alchemization process. Are a human's attempts at transformation sometimes, then, a bit on the superficial side? We gather information and experiences and insights, but do we really take them internally? Do we take them inside for that internal processing? Do we hurry the process, do you think? Do we expect to gather our own nectar and create deep alchemy and transformation in ourselves, without the application to every step that the transformation warrants? Do we ever cut corners, if they can be cut? Do we hurry? Do we accept lower hanging fruit or reach to the higher fruit on the more inaccessible or challenging branches? And are we willing to add our own essence, our own life force, in order to transform what we're working with into something uniquely our own? The bees showed me that real alchemy happens in this internal phase. It's not enough to collect healing techniques and spiritual teachings or apply them to our life experiences. They have to be processed discerningly and unhurriedly through our own inner laboratory. We have to be prepared to do that deep dive. And we have to allow ourselves to undergo a full and respectful processing before we can become wise enough to actually use and share and grow from what we've learned. What also struck me in observing these industrious little bees in their alchemization of nectar to golden honey was that this is very much a team effort. It wasn't an individual process. So while each bee did its own gathering and did its own internal processing of the nectar, the transformation into honey was actually, finally, a community effort. Back in the hive, the processed nectar was passed between the bees and then further refined and then carefully placed into the waiting honeycomb, where the water content was then reduced right down through fanning of many, many wings, all working together in chorus. This chorus concentrated the processed nectar until the result was the sweet, raw, golden honey. True alchemy, often requires community then. That final transformation, turning the processed nectar into honey, a transformation that was enduring and that could last indefinitely. That final transformation needed to include a collective effort somewhere, the effort of the entire hive. Each bee had done its service to itself and also to the hive. It had contributed to its individual role and also to the enduring end result. Yes, I think that's what I want to say, that they had made a contribution to the enduring end result that was something not a single one of them could have achieved alone. How often do we try to do our inner work in complete isolation then? I'll put my hand up to that. I spend a lot of time alone and I do process much of my stuff when I'm in that space. The bees showed me that whilst the internal processing is individual, is necessary, perhaps the final stages of transformation often benefit from community involvement, from sharing the alchemy that we have achieved with others, allowing our individual insights to be refined through relationship. This seemed to be part of the natural alchemical process that the bees were experts at. Could you conclude then that the final stage of alchemy is how honey once created shaped into the form that was enduring, that could last indefinitely, once perfected by the efforts of the entire hive? There was no need to ever revisit that alchemy. There was no need to ever re-alchemize it again. It was complete. Every stage was complete. It had been transformed systematically in every stage into something that was perfect and enduring. Through the alchemical process, the bees had created something that concentrated the life force of hundreds of flowers into a form that simply wouldn't spoil. And the entire process that was dependable because of the approach that had been perfected over many generations was enduring. Each generation of bee simply needed to learn the perfection of the alchemization process. There's such a difference between temporary change and lasting profound transformation. And the bees weren't just creating food for consumption. They were creating a concentrated essence that could sustain an entire colony through uncertain times. Real alchemical work creates something similar in our lives. When we properly transform our experiences through discernment, internal processing, community refinement, we create inner resources that can sustain us through difficulties too. The wisdom we develop, the healing we integrate, the skills we master, the transformation we receive. These become concentrated essences that we too can draw on whenever they're needed. So watching the bees work through the entire summer season taught me a lot about the natural timing of alchemical processes. The bees didn't try to rush the process. They worked steadily, gathering when flowers were abundant, processing continuously, and building their stores day by day, cell by cell. Each step was taken and completed in the full belief that you achieve the transformation step by step. If we do the work that needs doing today and save the work that needs doing for tomorrow to be done, then by the closing of the season, the stores will be replenished, resilient and full. In our instant world, we often want transformation to happen really quickly, but the bees showed me that real alchemy follows natural timing. Some processes just can't be rushed. The bees have to wait for the flowers to bloom. The enzymes need to take time to take effect. The water content of honey has to be reduced gradually. Transformation work must not be superficial. It can't run to a timetable. It won't be forced. We mustn't rush the process that needs the luxury of natural timing for it to be fulfilled. The bees taught me this. They taught me to trust the rhythm of transformation, to work steadily without forcing, and to allow the natural stages to unfold in their own time. When I'm working with clients or doing my own inner work, I think about the bees. How could I not? I think about the discerning first step. What am I selecting to work with? Is my client looking for a quick, superficial fix, or are they choosing a deeper dive that brings the highest potential for permanent transformation? Are we both fully present? Are we both fully intentional? Are we both fully committed to the process we are in? Are we prepared to work together? Am I allowing for proper internal processing, adding my own essence to transform the raw material? Are they doing the same? Am I including community in any refinement stages? Are they? Am I trusting natural timing? Am I creating something that has multiple healing applications? Are they doing that too? The bees showed me that alchemy is a natural process and it follows certain principles. Selection, gathering, internal transformation, community refinement, proper timing, and the creation of something that is ultimately perfect and enduring. Whether we're making honey, healing trauma, developing new skills, creating anything that's meaningful, I think these same principles apply. Watching the bees work amongst my flowers this summer gave me a masterclass in transformation that no book could have provided me with. The bees demonstrated that true alchemy is patient, it's thorough, it's reciprocal, and it's community-minded. And most importantly, they demonstrated that when transformation is done properly, it creates something golden, something that can nourish and heal not just ourselves, but everyone around us, and for a long, long time to come. Next year, I will be replanting those fantastic plants in my garden. I'll be thinking mindfully about how I can play my part in the transformative alchemy that the bees understand so very well. That's it for another show this week. I'm thrilled that you dropped by. I present Future Self Energetic Show every week for UK Health Radio, and I'd be delighted to spend more time with you next week, so do tune in. The world of energy is amazing, and it's magical, and it's mysterious, and there's always so much for us to explore about it. You have a vital connection to a web of energy fields around you. Use that connection for your benefit. I've been working with vibrational energetics all my life, and I know that when you improve your energy field, you can uplevel any part of your life.